Hello, Cinefans. I'm Kendall Kruver, and this is Watching Classic Movies. My guest is Michelle Scusamara, Registrar and Outreach Coordinator of the Stoogium in Ambler, Pennsylvania. This three-story museum, dedicated to the Three Stooges, contains thousands of artifacts and works of art. It's also the home of the Three Stooges Fan Club, one of the largest and most enduring in the nation. We talked about the many surprises that the Stoogium holds, the supportive fan community that has helped it to thrive, and a new book that reveals the underseen history of the Stooges' extensive career on the road. Welcome, Michelle. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Everything about the Stoogium fascinates me. Its beginning, what it contains, and then we've also got a new book connected with the museum to discuss today. So I want to start with Gary Lassen, the founder of the museum, because I think his story is so interesting. He's actually, by marriage, a part of the Stooges family. So tell me about that history.
That's right. So Gary Lassen, he is our family connection to the Three Stooges. He married a woman named Robin, and Robin's grandfather was Larry Fine's youngest brother, Morris Feinberg. And Mo, he went by Mo. He was the connection and the inspiration for Gary to start collecting Three Stooges memorabilia. Mo was so proud of his older brother being, you know, a famous Hollywood actor and a Hollywood figure, that he himself was running a Three Stooges fan club that is now headquartered from the Stoogium. Gary is the president of the fan club as well. So it's the family connection which provides us, you know, some legitimacy as to being right. the location of the largest collection of Three Stooges memorabilia in North America. But we also have this, you know, beautiful family connection where Gary had, at that time, his grandparents were gone, and he had this new family that he married into, and he was the first boy in the family. So Mo didn't have any sons, didn't have any grandsons, and he had this new guy, Gary, hanging around, who was very interested in the Three Stooges. So they were able to bond over that. And it's a very sweet basis of our collection and the museum itself.
And this is a huge collection. And I hear there's over 100,000 pieces of memorabilia.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah. You've got three stories.
So right now I'm on the top floor, which is the third floor in the art gallery. We have two offices that are, one is our research library and archive. And then the other office up here is the extension of the archive, and it has all of our photographic prints. So we have about 14,000 photographs that are, I know.
Wow.
They're all digitized at this point, but we have a lot of stuff just on this floor. On our second floor, we have a film vault that has all kinds of titles and formats of the Three Stooges films. And then on the bottom floor, we have two storage units. One is just a flat file dedicated to posters, and then the other is just a lot of, I want to say it's under 10,000 items of varying display quality, because we have a lot of great stuff, but we're sort of limited to what we can actually display. There's limits to time and space, as I always tell people, because they're like, well, why don't you have this? So, well, it lives in storage, because where am I going to put it?
Right. Well, do you ever circulate things, or is it?
We sure do. On the second floor is the cabinet the exhibit that gets changed over the most is the new arrivals case. Most of the exhibits were actually installed with the intent of being permanently installed. I think the idea was we're showing the best and brightest, and we're one of those institutions that if we don't have it, it's unlikely that it exists in good condition elsewhere. So there's no actually having a duplicate 6-sheet poster from a 1930s film. The fact that it survived into the 21st century is unheard of, but the idea that there would be two is just crazy.
Yeah. Well, and now this book that we'll talk about a little bit later, A Tour de Farce, The Complete History of the Three Stooges on the Road, it's got a very fascinating intro where it talks about Gary's work
to start the museum. And this is actually a very difficult process, putting it all together, building it. So in a way, you do have your base that kind of has to stay.
Yeah. I think that you and I might have a similar like cultural touchstone, but there's that, there's a Rilo Kiley song that any idiot can like open up a museum and just put all the things that you can, you like, and then like, that's it. A lot of people think that's what a museum is like, that, yeah. Well, you have the collection, all you have to do is hang it on the walls. But then there's also like interpretation and make proper care and feeding of your collection, for example. So it's not just the things that are on the walls, but we have like a whole infrastructure of things that are in storage that also need the proper care and attention. So the process, Gary, I think, did the right thing by engaging a design firm. And they were, you know, the design firm didn't have a lot of information about the Stooges, and aside from like their childhood knowledge, and he doesn't know a whole lot about museum design or, you know, crafting a historical narrative for a historical space like this. So the process bringing those two worlds together is like, we're the product of a lot of collaboration and right. Everyone, not necessarily meeting each other where the other was at the time, but really like coming together to create something that is lasting and dynamic.
Yeah, like a living thing, a living right. Appreciation of your subject.
Yeah, I think that especially the New Arrivals case is one example, and the art gallery is another example of the maintaining the legacy and then just sort of witnessing the expanse of their legacy that people are still creating, crafting, protecting what the Three Stooges mean to them in like all kinds of forms. Like, we have the art gallery. People love the Three Stooges. And, you know, it's not just somebody doodling in a notebook. Like, we have, you know, artists like Drew Friedman, I'm blanking on his name, but the gentleman who was responsible for the design in Pan's Labyrinth, he's a huge Three Stooges fan, just drew something. It's a lot of people you don't expect, maybe some people that you do expect, but all of these people are able to have a common ground where they can come together and say, this is the thing that makes me laugh.
I fully believe that this diversity of people would care about the Stooges, because anything that was on TV for all to see while you were growing up, there's a huge unifying factor to that. And I think it's one of the interesting things about the studio is this, you've got this home base for the fan club, which was one of the oldest and the largest in the nation. It's still huge support for them.
The fan club is wild, because I can be in contact with someone who just signed up and this is like the greatest addition to their whole life. Gary always talks about how people always thank him for still putting it out, because like, you know, you get the mail, you get bills and, you know, all kinds of nonsense you don't want, but 4 times a year you get a publication from the fan club, and you're having like the best time of your life for 16 pages. It's like new and exciting. But I can talk to someone who's a new member, but I can also talk to someone who's been a member since he was a teenager in 1974.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I literally just met somebody he signed up when he was 16 in 1974, and that was like the very first iteration of the fan club. And it went all, he's signed up every year for forever. And he's from Texas, and he came to the Stoogeum because that's where he's getting this mail from.
I mean, it's true that we're just so connected to our online lives. Mm-hmm. The idea of holding something in your hands like that is amazing.
Yeah. Facebook is a nice proxy for the fan club, but it's not really the same as the mail that you receive. And there used to be like an annual meeting, but that sort of is on its way out. I mean, not that the fan club is on its way out, that the general meeting that we would have relatives come in supporting actresses who had worked with the Stooges before. A lot of those figures are, you know, unable to travel. They are no longer with us. Like Right. Mo Howard's daughter passed away about a year and a half ago. And she was incredible. She did so much for the fan community and establishing the legacy of the Three Stooges outside of, like, you know, check out these knuckleheads. Like, they're like, the Three Stooges brought a lot of people together. And she did a lot to make sure that people knew that. She was very proud of her father, for sure.
Well, and just this fan club has also been responsible for film restorations. And like you said, bringing people to be appreciated for their work while they're still around. I read in your book that they put gravestones on them, unmarked graves of players. This is, you know, they're actually a service group in some respects.
Those stories are a little bit before my time, but I do know that a lot of they come from, like, you know, a very sweet, well-intentioned place that, you know, these are people who are important to me and that we can come together to honor them in a satisfactory kind of way. The ones I can think of off the top of my head, like Gina Corrado and Simona Boniface. She was like a very grand dame. Like, when she was a teenager in San Francisco, she was like a model and everyone knew who she was. But like, then she, I think, became better known as a playwright after her time with the Stooges, because she was like this very, you know, stately woman and, you know, a nice contrast to their goofiness and their chaos. And she's just like very regal and, you know, she's very tall, long neck, she's beautiful. You do this job for like a couple of hours a week, and then you go and, you know, do the other things that you're good at. It's truly tremendous. They worked with everybody.
Yeah, no, that was one thing that really impressed me, was just how many people there were. Okay, so tell me about the museum. What can a visitor expect when they come to the museum?
Okay, so I will tell you that most people do not know what to expect, because we do not keep a lot of images of the museum on the internet. We have a very strict no photography policy.
Oh.
So this sort of keeps the air of mystery around the Stoogium. So people are like, this could be somebody's house in a weird basement. Like, this guy collects Three Stooges stuff. Like, in your experience with Three Stooges fans, what's that really like?
Yeah.
So when you open the door, you are welcomed by the Stooges singing "Hello, Hello, Hello." And then, as we discussed, the museum is three floors. So I recommend that people start on the second floor with all of our introductory exhibits. We have some interactive touch screens that you poke Curly in the eyes, and he will give you all kinds of information about the Stooges, their films, the supporting cast, their live appearances. So there's three chairs that are in front of these screens. So people can really be parked there, just poking at the screen and learning all kinds of things. The movie theater that screens the shorts is also on the second floor, as well as the Hall of Shem. That is a later addition to the museum. It used to be a coat room, but then when the museum opened and time went on, that Gary decided that this space was better utilized to demonstrate the breadth of Shem Howard's movie career. He was a movie star outside of the studio. He had left the live act before they became the Three Stooges. So he came before Curly, and then when Curly was ill and unable to continue performing, he was replaced by Shemp. So Shemp, he's like, you know, he was in all of these Bowery Boys movies, Abbott and Costello movies. And he was just like one of those people that was always around Hollywood and like Hollywood, famous people adjacent. Like, he was friends with Buck Jones. Like, sure, Shemp Howard, why not?
Yeah, he's here. We'll just use him.
Yeah. So the Hall of Shemp, I think, it's a very long hallway, just filled with one sheets and lobby cards and other personal ephemera from Shemp's non-Stooge movies. Then we also, on the second floor, we have some video games. We have a custom pinball machine. An artist, he won this, you know, international contest of restoring what used to be a Dolly Parton pinball machine and converting it into a Three Stooges pinball game.
There's so many Dolly Parton machines. Every time I see pinball machines in places, like Dolly Parton.
I got to tell you, when one of the great perks of working in an office is if you have a pinball machine in your office, it's nice to have it. It's like, I like to bebop around upon it. And yeah, it has all kinds of stooge noises and it's true. It's something else for sure. The bottom floor is our main historical exhibit. So that's where you're going to see personal items, movie posters, props. We have a set of the Stooges' live appearance jackets from the late 1960s. So like these are their stage worn costumes. Those are pretty great. We have some props from movies like the Quinto puppet from Snow White and the Three Stooges. That's also a very interesting thing that was one of... You're based in California?
No, I'm in Seattle.
West Coast, okay. But you're familiar with like the Bob Baker's Marionette Theater? Okay, yes. So that was one of Bob Baker's first puppets. Yeah, I didn't know that. I knew that Bob Baker designed the puppet. I didn't know that until someone contacted us. I want to say 2 or 3 years ago, and he is one of the puppeteers from the television program Pinwheel. That this was a show that was on when I was a small child, and my sister and I believed that we had hallucinated the show, that no one we knew Pinwheel, but the guy from Pinwheel was like, I'm very interested in puppeteering history, and I know that Bob Baker designed this puppet. Do you know this puppet? I'm like, do I know this puppet? I also know Pinwheel.
That's a very interesting way to be validated there.
I would say I had a great time doing it.
What do you think people definitely should see in the museum? What's your favorite part of the museum?
My favorite part of the museum is the art gallery. My background is in history and art museums. So there is a lot of, you know, museum theory that perhaps people think that spaces like galleries and museums are not for them. But not only is art for everybody, like the art gallery is one of the most special parts of the Stoogeum because Gary has taken so much care to provide space for all kinds of fans. And this is really speaks to the comedic legacy of the Stooges because they're, you know, we have art here from famous artists like Drew Friedman, but we also have a couple of Art Hirschfeld prints as well.
Oh, wow. But
we also have fan-made art. Like we have these zombie dolls that some guy made. They're converted Ken dolls, but they have their eyeballs falling out because I guess that's what zombies are like. But it's art spanning like not just when they were active in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, but like stuff that's being made now. And they're just like, I love the Three Stooges so much that I made you this thing.
Yeah.
It's truly tremendous. But my favorite part is, which is hard to see on our camera, but is the 39-foot mural done by Philadelphia muralist David McShane. He's one of the directors of the mural arts program in Philadelphia. Because if you don't know, Philadelphia is also the mural capital of the United States.
I didn't know that.
Yes. So he is very well known for several pieces throughout Philadelphia, like the Larry Fine mural at Larry Fine's birthplace at 3rd and South. So he did both the first one that did not last, and then he did the replacement mural. And then there's Philadelphia Phillies won the World Series. He did this gorgeous Phillies mural. That's overlooking the water, which is really beautiful. But he also did this great mural at the Stoogeum because he was a huge Three Stooges fan. And across from the mural is his senior thesis project when he was a student at the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts. And our director's parents purchased this piece for the collection. And Gary kept in contact with him for all of these years and commissioned him to make the mural for us.
Oh, wow.
So he's a very good friend of the Stoogeum and in excellent standing. And because I'm a huge art fan, getting to like converse with David McShane, the muralist, is truly incredible, but also doing it through this context of the Three Stooges, it's like, truly for everybody.
The connection, yeah. And I mean, I'm looking at it now. I was like, I wish I could share this image. It really is varied collection of art. I mean, just the few pieces I see behind you, there's so many different interpretations here. And it's a really interesting way of people expressing their fandom. So no, you were,
yes,
you were talking about people being a little surprised coming in to the museum. What are some of the reactions of people coming to the museum? Like, what is their impression of seeing all of this?
Well, I think that having such, I don't want to say that people have low expectations, but they have like middling expectations that if, you know, it has to be something, but it's not often you get to see something of this magnitude in the suburbs. It's like, it's a nice surprise for sure. I think that most people are just bowled over that a lot of this stuff still exists. Because like I said before, that we're one of those places that if it's not here, it's likely not at a second location. That a lot of the paper goods and ephemera, like movie posters and lobby cards, they were rented by theaters on a screening basis. And you were supposed to return them to the studios or to your film exchange, or you're supposed to destroy them. So we have like a whole room dedicated to one sheet posters, not just from the exchanges, but we also have posters from all over the world, because Three Studios weren't just in the United States. They're, you know, they have fans globally. We have a giant six sheet Snow White and the Three Stooges poster from Italy. Just off the top of my head, we have a Have Rocket Will Travel one sheet poster from Kazakhstan. We have another one sheet from Argentina for the Swing Parade of 1946. Like, they were everywhere. And it's like this common language of comedy, which sounds a little cheesy, but at the same time, like, it's cheesy, but it's true.
Right. I mean, it means something to people. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I mean, just, okay, the idea of them being all over the place, that's a good opportunity for us to move into this book that you all have put out. So I'm going to just say the name again, A Tour de Farce, The Complete History of the Three Stooges on the Road. And this is by Gary Lawson. Tell me about the book. I was expecting kind of an encyclopedic reference, maybe something a little drier, but it was very, very entertaining. I'd love to hear your take on it.
Well, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because the book is a solution to a gap in Stooges scholarship, that there are a lot of books about their careers in movies and how they, like, they were in these shorts that were really popular, and then they were on TV everywhere, and then the end. And then, or they were popular in the movies, then they were on the TVs when people were children, and then there was like a gap, and then there was all of this fan culture and memorabilia and merchandise that wasn't necessarily available when you're a child. But then there's this whole other part of their career that had been undocumented, that the Stooges spent most of their time on the road. They only filmed a couple of weeks every year in California, and then they had to, you know, pay the bills. So once they were, you know, call cut on their last short, they have a tour planned. So the story that he tells in the book is he saw somebody wear a Rolling Stones tour t-shirt, and he saw all these dates that the Rolling Stones were performing in cities and all over the United States. And he was like, well, the Three Stooges also did that, but who knows where they were and who documented all of it. So he one day started just by plugging in the information he had from the collection into an Excel spreadsheet. So being able to see things in this kind of like official kind of way, he's able to find gaps and make predictions and access things like the Margaret Herrick Library, the Library of Congress, becoming a minor expert at using microfiche machines and figuring out how to fill in the gaps in the schedule. And then things change with, you know, advancements in technology, and he's able to find so much more information, not just from crowdsourcing fan club members or just anyone who might be interested on Facebook, but people are digitizing theater programs, they're digitizing newspapers, and you're able to fill in even more gaps. So there, while the A Tour de Farce is generally a complete history, there are, you know, there's some dates that don't have a lot of backing information that he was very careful in order to like find the right sort of primary sources that would confirm an appearance, because memory is fallible and not totally guaranteed. So for example, someone just emailed us today and said, I got your book and you didn't include this appearance.
Oh.
And I'm like, my heart stopped, but I am aware of this appearance, but we don't have any backing information. We just know from stories that are shared in, like, you know, remember when in this very small third tier market,
right,
a newspaper saying, my aunt said she got to meet the Three Stooges when they appeared at this theater. But we just know that story being told over and over again. We don't have photographic evidence. We don't have a newspaper announcement. The Historical Society hasn't been able to come up with anything either. So I'm able to comfortably say, these are the things I have. If you have any more information,
can you prove it?
We can absolutely do that. But that's sort of like that's what we're working with, that a lot of hearsay can come up with a concrete appearance, and that's wonderful. But then a lot of it is like, I kind of remember, like, this person could be mistaken, and, you know, this particular small town is only a 25-minute drive from Chicago. So you can just as easily see the Three Stooges in Chicago at like a large theater as you were to see them at maybe a gas station in this very small town that also had a theater.
Yeah.
And a lot of these places they're not maintaining archival documents that would reflect their, you know, their past lives. Most theaters that they appeared at are no longer functioning in their, you know, I always say it always bums me out when I see the Three Stooges on stage at the most beautiful theater in the world, and then I find out it's the most gorgeous CVS.
Oh, yes. Isn't that true? So many drugstores used to be movie theaters or vaudeville palaces.
Yeah. So we have our favorite example is this small theater in Los Angeles that it was this grand theater. It's in this very diverse neighborhood. And it's at the time, it was one of those places that perhaps white acts weren't necessarily performing there unbidden. So the fact that they were there at all was incredible, but now it's like the most beautiful CVS you've ever seen.
Yes, it's unreal. And I suppose that's one thing that's really nice about the book is that there's lots of photos in here. There's like lobby cards, there's images of marquees. I mean, just it brings you back to a time when there would be a very elaborate marquee for this one appearance with, you know, figurines and pictures and all of that stuff. It is nice to bring that back. Because as you say, we are now in a world with the most beautiful CVSs in the world. And it's nice to be reminded of that. And another thing I really loved about the book was the personal stories. I mean, there was one of this boy who had gotten a polio vaccine? He'd gotten a polio vaccine as a part of the push that the Stooges were doing to encourage people to do it. So it was his story of meeting them. Things like that, it's really wonderful.
Yes, that story originally appeared in an issue of the Three Stooges Journal not long ago. The story is called, you know what, I actually forget. It was a very clever one when we came up with it, but it was a sort of controversial piece of Three Stooges memory because people were not necessarily clamoring to accept or decline a vaccination of any kind. So it was, which was kind of tricky.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's one of that was the thing. Like what I told my parents about this particular story and they were like, oh yeah, well, we got vaccinated for polio. We were, you know, it was like a community event and all the kids went and we were all together. And then you got your sugar cube, you got your
right.
your vaccination, and then like maybe there might be a children's entertainer of some kind to sort of take your mind off the thing. And that was a different time. This is a different time.
Right.
But I think that, yeah,
it's interesting just the many ways it brings you back. Right. I mean, there's just
sure.
there's so many aspects of our life that go into the people who entertain us. They're the way they, it goes back and forth kind of, it's just really mm-hmm. fascinating. Yeah. And it's just really interesting, you know, the book, the museum, how all those things work together to kind of reflect who we are, you know, in
yes.
a way. Yeah.
And generally speaking, we're all big fans of the Three Stooges.
Yeah. If we're going to say one thing, that's the thing that we say. Yes. Absolutely.
This is what will bring us together.
So before I let you go, is there anything that you have not said about the Stoogium that you really want people to know who are maybe thinking about taking a visit?
So the most important thing that people need to know about visiting the Stoogium is that we are currently only available by appointment. So if you want to visit the Stoogium, we ask that you visit our website, stoogium.com. And on the visit page, it has a list of all of our available dates and times for about a month out. So like I said before, the staff is really small here. So our lives are very different than they were 3 years ago. So we're sort of still working, not sort of, we are still working around those changes and the way that the museum functions. So we are generally open for a day or two, maybe a week. It's never the same day anymore. We try to catch everybody between Monday and Friday. So all of that information is on the website. We do, especially with the summer coming up, we do try to accommodate as many requests as possible. There are a lot of moving pieces, but most people are generally pretty happy with where we've landed.
Right, right. Okay.
So
plan ahead.
Yes. Planning ahead, perfect. I never like to walk out of the building and see someone with out-of-state plates and say, well, I'm here to visit the Stoogium. And I said, well, I'm going to go home to make dinner. So best of luck to you.
Yeah. Enjoy the exterior of this lovely building. Okay. Well, that's good. We don't want people to be disappointed because I know that people will be excited to see this place. Well, thank you so much, Michelle, for taking the time to talk to me today. I am so excited about all these different things that you've been doing. And I really do hope that I can come and visit someday myself.
Well, that would be wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
For more information about A Tour de Farce, the complete history of the Three Stooges on the Road and the Stoogium, go to watchingclassicmovies.com. The Stoogium is included in my book, The Classic Film Fan USA Travel Guide, over 500 attractions for road trips and online exploration, which you can find wherever you buy books online. Thank you to everyone who has purchased the guide so far. I really appreciate your support. If you're enjoying it, I'd love your review and rating. It helps a lot. Thank you for listening. This is Kendall Kruver, watching classic movies. Until next time.